Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Eva Llorens, the Latin American senior reporter for Infrologic. Thank you for tuning in today. Our guest is Adrian Lara, principal analyst upstream Latin America for global data and analytics provider Wood Mackenzie.
Thank you, Eva. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
So as you said, I'm the principal analyst for the upstream research team with Wood Mackenzie. I'm based in Mexico City, and from here, basically, together with another team based in Brazil, we cover most of the Latin American countries. And although the focus is upstream sector, we ultimately overlap with other energy segments. And as you can imagine, also with energy policy and the politics of the key producing countries in the region. Before, I was also with another consulting research energy firm for about 10 years. I've been doing this. And before that, if you have me go back to my beginnings in the energy sector, I started my career with the national oil company here in Mexico, Pemex. I was part of the trading arm, and that was many years ago. I was more focused on the markets and logistics of commodities traded by the company. That's more or less the summary of my career.
Recently, Claudia Schonbein, a member of the National Regeneration Party, became the first female president in Mexico's history. Schonbein is a scientist and a politician who served as Secretary of the Environment under current President Andrés Manuel López Obrador. She was also head of Mexico City's government, and she is slated to replace the current president in October. Of course, she has many challenges as president. Can you discuss with us, Mr. Lara, explain the challenges Mexico faces to meet energy demands? And how did we get to this point?
Sure, Eva. Our view is that it's basically the lack of enough investment, right, or underinvestment, which has basically got Mexico to the point of having its energy supply feeling some stress for delivering currently. And of course, when you look at the growth of that demand, being very challenged in meeting that growth in demand with its current energy supply. The more detailed answer to your question is, of course, there's been underinvestment due to a lack of opportunities, and that will apply across not just oil and gas, but also power, and within power, renewable power. And that, to some extent, is connected in the recent years to an increase in the regulatory, say, hurdles that we've seen in the additional bureaucracy that is there for instance, permitting and bringing new projects to the first sort of levels of production, right? And I think it's also important to note that in this current administration, there's been a change in the, say, approach that has basically favored national companies. And in that, I mean the oil and gas national company, Pemex, the national power utility company known as CFE. And that has come at the expense of somehow excluding or disincentivizing the investment from private actors. And that's something that we think at the moment is at the core of how this new administration is going to redefine the role that public investment is going to be complemented by private investment.
Just curious as to, could you elaborate a little bit more on how did we get to this point?
Yeah, sure. I think if you ask me, and I'm going to break it down here for by segment, right? In the case of oil and gas, right, what's happened is the national oil company Pemex, right, they've been investing, they've always invested. And to be clear, this administration has actually managed to stop the decline of production that came from many years before. But we think that although that investment has been enough to somehow stabilize the production, there's a requirement for additional exploration if you want that plateau to remain. In other words, we see that by the end of this decade, that decline is going to go and be steep again, right? And for somehow to counter it, you need to have that additional exploration. And in there lies part of, you know, what we've seen, the fact that there hasn't been enough successful exploration by Pemex And also the fact that even though the reform that took place in at the end of 2013 and beginning of 2014 allow for bidding rounds, right, that basically brought different international companies and even some local ones to explore in Mexico, that was successful up to a point, but those bidding rounds were halted during this administration. So there is certainly a connection between that lack of bidding rounds and the fact that no more discoveries have been made or not enough discoveries have been made in the recent years, right? That's for the case of oil and gas. For the case of power generation, there are many years of underinvestment, right? And not just power generation, but also in the transmission and distribution infrastructure that is needed. There is a combination of a mismanagement of, in this case, the investment of the power utility, National Power Utility Company, but also the fact that the bidding rounds, or sorry, in the case of power, more the long-term auctions, right, that were also allowed by that energy reform of 2013 were halted in this administration. In short, there is an immediate effect for this last 5 years, right, that is coming from somehow restricting that private investment through the bidding rounds or through the auctions. And to some extent, also the fact that the national companies, right, probably not invested, or the strategy in general hasn't been the most successful in terms of increasing their output.
Well, thank you very much. How is Mexico going to overcome these incredible challenges that it is facing, especially in the energy sector?
The short answer, right, it's how logical is you need more investment, but we think that investment has to be public and private. And the public investment has to be as efficient as possible, right? So if I go back to that case of Pemex, I was explaining in my previous answer, Pemex has been investing in the last 5 years in certain projects, mainly onshore and shallow water projects that are perhaps not the most profitable, or in other words, they are costly, right? But of course, they contribute to production, but that is not necessarily the best, say, portfolio of projects in which the company can or should be investing. But those are the ones that are possible for different reasons, right? There should be, in the case of Pemex, for instance, a refocus of the strategy where projects that are developed are more profitable, right? And the same logic would apply, of course, to the power utility national company. And then in terms of private investment, I think the key aspect is that this regulatory hurdles, or in general, the regulatory framework now has to become more attractive and more stable, right? So as I mentioned, during this current administration, the last 5 years, we've witnessed changes to that framework that basically create uncertainty for investors. And there was, for instance, a reform to the power sector that was impacting the power generation in the country that ultimately, although it was approved, was reversed by the Supreme Court, right? Because there were several cases of appealing for the reversal of it. And ultimately, well, that brought things to, say, the status quo. But that risk of implementing such type of reforms is right now, I think, that in the head of investors and operators, right, that might be already operating in Mexico or attracted or considering coming to Mexico.
I have a question regarding that, because obviously we're going to have a new president coming in and trying to recuperate or recover the ground that was lost possibly under the current president in terms of foreign investment is going to be very, very difficult. I am just curious as to, can you provide, be a little bit more specific as to what does the new president need to do to gain that trust again from investors? I mean, I know you mentioned some of them, but if you could be more specific.
Sure. I think right now, the as you know, the election was just a few days ago, right?
And yes,
there's a lot of expectations, many questions in the environment, right, that are requiring an answer, not just in terms of energy. I think the framework here is that there are basically two scenarios, right, that can evolve, simply put. One is one where this new administration, right, led by Claudia Sheinbaum, follows the energy nationalism, right, that was implemented or pushed for by President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, right? And that basically meant strengthening the national companies, as I mentioned, but in halting the bidding rounds and the long-term auctions for power, right? That's in summary, right? What could continue, right? The other scenario is where Claudia Sheinbaum deviates from this, right? And that's what I meant by that's a big question in the air right now. Is she going to be able to deviate, right? And I think her background, right, is somehow what is given that at least interpretation, right? And that she is, by training, a scientist. She has a doctorate in energy engineering. She was a contributor to the Intergovernmental Climate Panel on Climate Change. And then she was an academic. And somehow that is there. But also during the campaign, she was more, in general, a bit more biased towards talking or supporting renewable energy rather than fossil fuels, right? So there is that part where basically gives some context to say, okay, perhaps then that's going to prevail and then she could go that route. But then, of course, she will have to deal, and this is an added aspect, right, of or outcome of the election, with the fact that there is now practically a qualified majority in Congress, right? And that Congress also has somehow a logic, political logic, right? Where they probably, you can assume they want to continue with, you know, the line of Mr. López Obrador, right? And so what she will need to do is, in our view, be very careful with, you know, the pace at which, you know, reforms could be, you know, sent to Congress, right? Of course, the content of those reforms, right? In terms of the energy segment or the energy sector, as I mentioned, there were already, you know, from the current administration, reforms that could impact the way the power sector functions, right? Specifically, reforms that will give even more prerogatives, right, by law to the national utility company, and that will act as a basically would be a lack of incentive, right, for attracting investment. So it's important that the content of that law, it's well assessed before, in the case that it is sent to Congress, right? In terms of PEMEX, I mentioned, right, there are some immediate requirements there. PEMEX has a major debt, is the most indebted oil company in the world, with a debt of over $100 billion in US dollars.
Yes.
Just the next 3 years, that payment can be over $40 billion. There's, of course, during this administration, some measures that the government has taken and basically, well, taking over some of that debt indirectly, and that risk then has passed from Pemex to, say, public finances. And that's something that is basically not sustainable, right, to the view of many observers. And so something has to be done about it in the short term, right? Something has to be addressed. The recently in the country, we've seen power outages, right, this last few months. And that's not going to change, or let's say the risk is still there, right? Because this is basically product of not having enough power generation and transmission, mm-hmm. as I mentioned earlier, right? And it's impacting more certain regions more than others, but it's not going to go away, right? Because any new power generation capacity that is in line to or projects that will start, in our view, starting until 2025, 2026, right? So it's something that has to be dealt there with immediately. And so we think that, as I mentioned Pemex, I mentioned the power outages, those are immediate concerns. For the longer term, we think the bidding rounds, for instance, in terms of oil and gas, right, are necessary because there is a prospective resource in Mexico, and in that I mean, let's say, oil and gas undiscovered resources, right, somehow outlined or estimated generally, but still need exploration to be effectively turned into reserves. But that resource is still very massive, right, in both onshore and offshore areas of the country, right? And we think that that's necessary not even for increasing production massively, but even for just maintaining the current level of production that we see in the country, right, which is around 1.8 million barrels per day. We think that is something that should be reassessed. Mexico has, in comparison to other countries in the region, good prospective resources, I mentioned, but also fiscal terms, you know, are relatively well placed, right? So in terms of how fiscally you compete with other countries in the region, it's well positioned. It can be improved as well, but we think it's something that at the moment it's completely uncertain whether it's going to happen, right? But it's nonetheless necessary. And finally, for power generation, the same, right? We think that in terms of renewable energy, it is necessary that those longer-term auctions, right, that were allowed during the energy reform come back, right? And of course, there is a bit more of context. besides the auctions, there's also a need for more certainty, right, in the regulatory framework that I mentioned earlier. But there's not a way in which Mexico, we think, can meet those energy demands. Put it other way, it's not only with public investment that you're going to meet them, but you necessarily will need private capital there too.
Yes. Mr. Lara, you mentioned all of the challenges that Mexico is currently facing. I'm just curious as to what are the challenges then from an investor's point of view? What are some of the challenges that energy investors are going to be facing down the road in Mexico?
Yes. Well, right now, as I mentioned, there's a lack of certainty for the ones that are already operating and the ones that we're considering Mexico as a viable investment option, right? I think in terms of the companies that are already operating, let me again go by sector, right? Because that's probably easier, right? Within oil and gas, right? In our conversations, right, with operators and interested parties, we think that the disfavored or somehow focus that the national company Pemex, right, has gained definitely meant that the opportunities for investment are not here, right? So companies that invested, say, in the 2014-2018 period in Mexico and that probably already took a chance for exploring, right, and that could not find, you know, enough discovered research that will turn into a project, some of them might consider leaving the country or take their investment somewhere else in the region, right? And I'm talking about companies that are still trying to find or have oil and gas projects in their portfolio, right? You can think of, you know, several international companies or even, you know, national companies that operate internationally, right? The companies that operate here, right, that the few that were able to, you know, have discoveries of enough size and that basically turned into a project, just will continue operating here. The risk is perhaps more in terms of not being able to expand their investment with, you know, additional projects, but perhaps just managing the production that they're going to have over the next few years, right? In terms of the, say, other segments, such as, you know, the power sector, there we think that it's definitely more nuanced in terms of how the government is going to give, again, or could give some more prerogatives to the national power utility company in that that company is now aimed to secure 54% of the overall power generation market, right? And that basically means that you're guaranteeing for the company, or look in another way, you're reducing that 46% that remains, right? That's where any private company operating the company will have to compete with, you know, other power generators, right? And that, right, is ultimately a risk for fully utilizing your install capacity, right? You might end up not using it fully, right? Because basically, effectively, your market share has been reduced. And that, in the end, also impacts your profitability, right? So those are very, you know, clear risks in our view that, you know, you might be impacting profitability of these companies.
You mentioned in your report that there is an expected decline in production past 2030. So I'm just curious as to what changes need to take place to avoid that post-production decline post 2030.
So as I mentioned earlier, Pemex has managed to stabilize production in this last 5 years. That's something to be recognized, right? And they've contributed with about 500,000 barrels per day. So that's additional production that has helped, or that's mitigated that decline, stabilized production, right? But that reduction, those 500,000 barrels per day, are going to decline rather steeply towards the end of the decade. And so to avoid that, right, what you need to do is start developing projects or bringing new production before, you know, you get to that point, right? And the reality is that Pemex, right, at the moment doesn't have a company. It's restricted in the number of fields that could be brought to production to compensate that decline, right? And so, in short, what they need is to be more successful in exploration, right? The company has been investing about 10% of the total budget in exploration, right? And most of that has gone to exploration and shallow water. For the 2025-2026 period, they have now budgeted an additional almost $1 billion for investment in deep water, right? Which is good in the sense of, you know, basically getting out of that shallow water, onshore focus that they've had. But at the same time, it's not guaranteed that they're going to find enough resources or discoveries are going to be successful, right? This exploration has a risky nature, right? And where, you know, many of the wells that you might be drilling could be dry, right? So in other words, right, that you need to increase your investment in exploration just to increase your chances, right? So in short, that's what we think is required, that investment in exploration increases by Pemex.
What risks or challenges Mexico will face in terms of integrating itself to the U.S. energy market? I know that has been a topic that has been mentioned lately.
Yes, it's an interesting question. And from our perspective, it's a complex situation in that, on the one hand, right, you are Mexico, right, as a nation, is very well connected to the U.S. You can think in terms of natural gas, right? The imports of natural gas from Mexico are getting close to 80% of the total demand in Mexico, right, at the moment. And that's basically, or it's allowed by the fact that you have interconnection, right, from the pipeline perspective. Most of these imports come through pipeline, and the production in the U.S. is there, right? It's mainly at the moment production of natural gas from Texas, right, from Permian Basin. So from that perspective, you know, there's a good integration, right? There's been a risk in it, there are downside. And back in 2021, there was a freeze in Texas that basically logistically, you know, interrupted exports from the U.S. to Mexico, and that of course translated into, you know, an economic loss for mainly for industry, right, in the northern part of the country, right? But, you know, some solution to it could be just building more gas storage, which Mexico don't have, right? At the moment, it doesn't even reach 5 days of full demand, right? And there's been initiatives to do that, but they are still, you know, on hold. But that could be, you know, one way of mitigating it, that sort of risk. But then there's this other aspect, right, of the integration, which is, I've seen it during this current administration of President Biden, where they've been more careful in, or they called to review how they are, you know, permitting for liquefied natural gas exports, right? And that in general connects to the fact that the U.S. also has to be careful, you know, in terms of its energy security, right? And because you are basically somehow depleting your gas reserves, right, in this case, and exporting them worldwide. But that is all premise in that, you know, the U.S. at some point is going to transition, right, to be less dependent on natural gas. And there are estimates for it, but there's always a risk that, you know, you fall behind and at some point you have less gas, and that basically means that you probably have to pay more for it, right? There's that risk in, you know, that relationship or integration with Mexico, that at some point perhaps the U.S. decides that, you know, it's not as easy to permit exports to Mexico, but we think it's, as of now, of a low probability for it. Then in terms of, let's not leave it out, in terms of oil and refined products, there's also a clear dependence, right, if you want to put it that way, from Mexico in the importing gasoline and diesel and from the U.S. And Mexico has exported historically, you know, heavy crude oil to the complex U.S. Gulf refineries, right, in the U.S. That right now, it's, you know, in terms of oil exports perhaps being redefined, it might change because Mexico's production has been decreasing, and also because Mexico wants to process more or refine more oil in Mexico. So in short, that could mean that exports to the U.S. of heavy Mexican crude oil could reduce significantly, you know, in the future. But in terms of gasoline and diesel imports from Mexico to the U.S., that's still there. And there is, again, coming back to that argument of how this government has looked for self-sufficiency, right? Somehow the example of it has been increasing gasoline production domestically so that we reduce our imports from gasoline and diesel from the U.S. But in the short term, I think that's not going to change significantly.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask you, I am putting this in three questions into one. Obviously, Mexico needs to go do an energy transition. I'm curious to know as to how much money would Mexico need to make its energy transition, and who will be financing these projects, in your opinion? And are there any important energy projects coming out of Mexico, and which are they?
First one, how much is required? That's, of course, I think that's it's a complicated question in that you need to somehow factor in the substitution that you need to do from fossil fuels. But before I get into that, let me put it this way. We think that in Mexico, if you look at renewable energy, in a way that's sort of how the low-hanging fruit of the energy transition, in that, and actually Mexico already had commitments to reaching more than 40%, 43%, which translates to 40 gigawatts of renewable power generation by the end of this decade, right? And of course, as you know, with other countries, Mexico is not going to meet that, right? In our latest forecast, we are, of those 40 gigawatts, I think we're getting to 28 gigawatts, right? So less than 30 by the end of this decade. Later in the 2030s, it somehow catches up, right? But there's always going to be that challenge. But so what I'm saying here is that investing in renewable energy, right, which is in power generation, right, a segment that now worldwide requires a minimum or no subsidies or support, policy support from government, is the first way of, you know, tackling that challenge of investing effectively in your energy transition, right? So that's the first thing to do, and you know, connects with what we've been discussing here, right? That for that, we need to, you know, make sure that the power sector has the right framework, and ideally that anything that is reform or passed impacting the sector includes or is very clear in how to attract private investment for renewable energy infrastructure. Right? That's one aspect. The other thing, and this is what I was meaning before, is that outside power, the power sector, there's really no, at the moment, no major decarbonizing projects in Mexico, right? And here I'm talking about carbon capture and storage, hydrogen projects, you know, electrification of transport, right? All of that is really practice non-existent. And that means that, you know, there's a need for incentivizing that investment, as with what we've seen in other, and what we're seeing worldwide, right? There needs to be some sort of direct, specific, or special funding for those type of projects, because you know, normally they are not, their profitability is quite low, or perhaps not if they are not even profitable, right? And so Mexico has conditioned, right, investing in these new energy segments to having some sort of specific funding, right? That's what you see in this Conference of the Parties events, right? Certain countries are, well, in general, right? It's a major issue how you're going to be able to make that investment flow, right? From, let's say, economies, emerging economies, or economies that are still have development paths, right? And that still need, you know, energy, you know, electrification in certain parts of their countries, right? And so I think that's a more challenging number to estimate, right? But I think just going back to the figure of investment in renewable energy, we're talking about at least, you know, depending on what are your assumptions and, you know, certain analysis, at least $100 billion over the next 10 to 15 years, right? US dollars, right? You know, as reference, you know, what Claudia Sheinbaum was proposing during her campaign was 13 US dollars, 13 billion, right? For renewable energy, right? So it's definitely more than that, right? Some estimates are indicating at least 8 to 10 billion US dollars per year. And that will be only just that first part of the energy transition.
Well, those were all of the questions that we have for Mr. Lara. I want to thank you, Mr. Lara, very much for participating in Crossroads.
Thank you very much. Again, glad to be able to share our opinions and analysis with you.
I would like to thank the audience for listening to Crossroads. I am your host, Eva Llorens. Please support Crossroads with a like, share, or download. Thank you for listening.